right now in the studio with us with our Trails Report, Charlie Sturgis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what you got going on?
I think given all the stuff I see out there on Main Street and whatnot, being on the trails might be a good call this weekend. Actually, a fair dose of Arts Fest and trails go together pretty well, I think. Ride in the morning, go out in the cool air, then go to the Arts Fest. What have I got going on? You know, surprisingly, very, very little. Look, how about that? Things are in great shape out there. We did finish the Shadow Lake extension up to the pass, which if you haven't gotten a chance to go ride that, it's in great, really in good shape. You know, good conditions, lots of people out there. So be careful, be polite, be conscientious about just general safety. We're seeing a lot of e-bikes out there on the paved areas, but there are a lot of them, and they're typically inexperienced riders. So give them a little room to work with that. And you know, here's a tidbit for you. Okay, so if you're turning 62 or you've turned 62 or 63, whatever, you know, the U.S. Forest Service has a seniors pass. It's $10 for a lifetime entry into the parks. August 28th, I found out. It goes up to $80.
Wow.
Yeah. So don't hesitate. Go get it now. I have no, the only reason I found it is I found out I lost mine, and it cost $10 to replace it. But the lady goes, yeah, it's going to be $80 starting August 28th. So anyways, enjoy that privilege and take advantage of it while you can before it goes up. Otherwise, have a great weekend out there. You know, things are in great shape. And I guess ride early and be careful because it's awfully hot in the afternoon.
Yeah, I just want so any new trails? I know that we've added, of course, the Freemason. You've got another one that's unnamed in Round Valley, or
Porky Climb.
Porky Climb.
Porky Climb. Porku Climb. They found a bunch of porcupines along the way when they were doing it, and that, if you didn't know, you know, that's built as it's directional up. It's also designed with the idea that adaptive cycling cyclists can use it. So something the NAC really was looking for. And it's also, it's probably the lowest grade trail I think we have in all of Park City.
Yeah.
Probably, and then one more thing, though. This is exciting. We do hope it's going to work out really well for snow biking.
Yeah. It's not on any of the maps. Did you not know that you were building it?
We don't put anything on a map until it's done.
Okay.
Because you never know what might happen. Murphy can come along and all of a sudden things go sideways. So, yes, we did put Freemason on just before we were done, but we were already started. Porky Climb had not been started until after the map.
Okay. And also, word on the street this week was that you'll be making pine cone downhill only. Is that true?
No. I don't know. Good for you. I haven't even heard that rumor. Mm. But, you know, resolving some pine cone issues in the long run would be exciting. It's definitely more a basin mission than it is necessarily a mountain trails mission. That is technically their trail. I certainly would support that kind of not support making pine cone one way, but support some kind of a potential directionality by building another trail in the area that would maybe make sense out of that. I would think the big thing for me with pine cone is typically on a Saturday, Sunday, I don't plan on riding down it. I would just say, you know, basically ride up, go do the crest. Now with the Shadow Lake Loop stuff, go do that. There's a lot of options. I would just simply avoid riding down pine cone on weekends.
Okay. So there was not any plans then because I had heard that another trail would be built, you know, to have an up and then a down.
Yeah, there's always things on a wish list out there. But no, at the moment, there's no solid plans.
Okay, Charlie, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Leslie.
I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the 48th annual Park City Arts Festival kicking off tonight with the Free Locals Night. And as always, our normal traffic flows and parking areas are disrupted as Main Street closes in the studio. Tell us what to look for. I have Marketing and Special Events Manager Dave Marsh. Good morning.
Good morning.
So maybe we'll just start with road closures. Again, we've got Main Street closed. Mm-hmm. It looks like Sweet Alley also closed.
Sweet is more of a soft closure, but we would say if you don't need to come up here, it may not be in your best interest. But if you're here to get your mail or to do other business, you're certainly more than welcome. Hopefully you have picked up your access pass at the Kimball. If not, we are open all weekend for anyone to pick those Park Ave or Sweet access passes.
Okay. So people, if they're coming to the post office, mm-hmm. they'll be able to come up and park?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if we look out your window, this Bob Wells historic lot, there's some temporary spaces there for the post office and for other quick errands on Main Street as well.
All right. And then we've also instituting paid parking in China Bridge. That'll be accessed only from Marsac. Though.
Correct. That's from the top. And that, I believe, begins at noon. And a portion of that's paid. There's a portion of it that are for artists and some of the festival folks as well.
All right. And then we've got, of course, the usual parking areas up at Deer Valley, only until 3 o'clock, though, each day.
It depends on the day. So this evening, there's an extended time. Tomorrow, I believe it's until 6 on Saturday. And then Sunday, there's some hours as well. We're sensitive to their overall concert schedule. So we do have a fair amount of allotment in there, just not 24/7. We also have access at the Cabriolet lot over at Canyons Village, and then certainly one of the main hubs at the Park City High School.
Okay. And then the $20 parking fee, is that new this year, or is that something the city instituted?
The city's doing that. We were certainly aware of it. I believe last year it may have been 10, but I think with some of the new components they're trying out, I believe it was a bit more during Sundance, for example, but they're going to try that out on Friday, today, and then through the weekend. I think with that, I'd echo their sentiment in that, let's take public transportation. We do have enhanced shuttle service at most of those locations. Carpool, take a local taxi or cab. And then new this year, we've partnered with Cole Sport, so we do have a bike valet as well on 7th Street.
Okay. Arts Fest hours, we're opening tonight, 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock. That's for locals.
Correct.
And tell us about how that works.
That is, again, in support presented by Park City Municipal. That is 5 o'clock until 9 o'clock tonight, locals night. So if you are a Park City or Summit County resident, just show us some ID, utility bill, and you'll get a complimentary wristband for the evening. That does not include Saturday or Sunday, for example, but that does get folks in tonight. And then general hours, we've extended them slightly on Saturday and Sunday. So Saturday, we moved everything back from previous years based on feedback from some of the HPCA folks and the artists themselves. So 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. tomorrow, which will hopefully keep people on the street a bit longer. And then Sunday, 10 to 6.
Okay. That sounds normal, those hours.
That used to be 9 to 6, but we've moved the start times back to 10.
Okay. And in terms of the wristbands, you buy one and it's good for all
Correct.
Three days if you're not a local tonight?
Yes, adults, so 18 plus is $12. And again, this is the biggest fundraiser for the Kimball Arts Center. So that is a 3-day pass. If you are a quote-unquote kid, which is 6 to 17, it's only a $6 pass for the weekend, and then children 5 and under free.
Okay. And in terms of last year, we, of course, had that theft. Has the Kimball done anything to try and beef up security here?
We have. We've enhanced, and it's part of our annual review of each of the festivals, so we do kind of an enhanced recap internally. And then within that, security was certainly a large component for us. So we have enhanced overnight security. We do have a brand-new security firm as well. And then basically, we have kind of continued and enhanced integration with the Park City Police Department as well.
Yeah. Did we ever figure out what happened with that
artwork?
We did
not, unfortunately, no. Neither the police nor us had any really substantial leads, unfortunately.
All right. Well, let's just talk about the festival itself. How many artists are we going to see?
We will. And Hannah Palmer, our artist manager, is over at Deer Valley at Artist Check-In. We'll probably accept one or two more walk-ups on our wait list this morning. So we'll probably be just about 230, 60 of which will be new. So that's very exciting. Artists are representing 34 straight states, and we have two from Canada this year. So on the artist side, it's great. I mean, we'll have anywhere from 890 to almost 990 applications, and then we have to jury those down to about 230. So exciting for us.
Right. And that's what we're seeing happening today, right?
Correct. As of 3 a.m. this morning, we started the early load-in for those folks. And then momentarily, we begin basically every 9 minutes. We have a very detailed schedule of artists. They all check in at Deer Valley, come over here on their 9-minute window based on their zone. Everybody's literally into the minute, and we'll be doing that until 3:34, and then the gates open at 5.
Okay. Anything new or different that you want to promote?
We talked about the bike valet, so that'll be fun for us. Yoga, we do a yoga fest every year. This year, we've moved that off the park height. This year, it'll be Saturday morning at 8 tomorrow at the Townlift Bridge. So that'll be on the bridge, which is very exciting for us. We are combining the yoga with one of our Kimball core kind of education classes. We're doing a plein air wake and draw class. So there'll be some folks doing some painting of those folks, doing yoga there. Based on some of the old construction at the Kimball, our previous home, as everyone's most aware, the kids area now is on the Townlift deck, Townlift Plaza. So kids will be there. some of our other areas, if folks are on the street getting questions, but our Artist Lounge, Volunteer Lounge, and Media Lounge is all at the Gateway Center, so thanks to the folks over there. In our VIP zone this year, our VIP lounge is at Summit Sotheby's International Realty right there on the corner of Heber and Main. So more logistical changes there. Food trucks are back. We have four folks at the top. Our continued three stages, so over 30 bands, 32 bands with Mountain Town Music. We're excited about that. So really anytime the gates are open, we will be having live music on those stages. And then last but not least, new, we have a new interactive map. So if folks are looking for things on the street live in real time, we have a functional sortable component on both of our Kimball Arts Center site and the festival site as well, which, again, you can sort by concessions, restrooms, ATM. There's the 12 mediums of the artists with websites and details there as well. Obviously, we have our printed programs, but the new interactive map, and to be clear, it's not an app, so you do not have to download it. It's mobile and functional right off your phone or your laptop.
Okay, and you'll also be setting up the beer and wine areas that people can just kind of be corralled and enjoy a beverage.
Three concessions and beer gardens, one by the Kimball stage, which was near the old Kimball. We have Miners Park and then the Brew Pub lot.
Okay. And still a need for volunteers. I know that takes a bunch.
Yeah. I mean, we are pretty good. There's always a few on the Sunday afternoon shifts where, you know, we're looking to fill a little bit. Courtney handles that and is doing a great job. I think the fun stats, if the community does not know. So just on the Arts Festival, we will do over 2,000 volunteer hours, 700 shifts, and over 400. We're almost approaching 500 unique volunteers this year. So a huge thank you to our community, most of which are in Park City and Summit County. We cannot do the Arts Festival without them.
All right, Dave, anything else you think people ought to know?
No, come on out, plan ahead, take public transportation, and enjoy the evening. Weather looks great, so come out and celebrate.
Great. Dave, thanks, W Supporter. It's 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio with a recap of yesterday's Park City Council meeting, Councilmember Becca Gerber. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So during public comment, you heard from Mark Blue telling council he's rather disappointed with council for pushing their agenda for a zero carbon footprint down everyone's throat. And other people have been talking about the micro transit program doing more harm than good since electric cars use coal-generated energy to charge their cars. So given that, I mean, is the council reconsidering their goals and how to reach them?
You know, so I think it's interesting that the phrase was that, you know, the council is shoving our carbon goals down everyone's throat, because this really came to us from the community. And our local carbon army, a group of local citizens very concerned about climate change and impact on our local community and our resort community, came to us and said that this is really important. And I feel it every day as someone who's grown up here and has watched this town evolve. When we have these really, really hot summers or we have really low snow years, you can kind of feel a sense of urgency, I think, and globally about the climate. And so I feel compelled to do everything that I can possibly do to help the situation. And as we are working our little heinies off to find a way to get provide solar power for our entire community, we are working very hard with Rocky Mountain Power at this point to see if that we can get a dedicated solar field somewhat locally for Park City. And when we make that change, if we have as much of our infrastructure and as many of our vehicles and as just really as much as we can already using electricity, then we'll be able to make that switch over to solar power very cleanly. So that's really our goal. It's a long-term plan, and we think we can do it. And, you know, we heard a lot from our local taxi community, but it was on public input. It wasn't scheduled for discussion, so we weren't able to respond to a lot of comments. But there was a lot that was put out there that I don't feel really represents the situation very well.
Now, the microtransit request for proposal, I think those were due. Are you evaluating those now?
Yeah, I believe that process just closed. And so they will be reviewing the RFPs and making a decision in the next few weeks.
Okay. Or at least bringing a recommendation to you.
Exactly.
Yeah. You personally were in support of the Sundance Institute remodeling the Sports Authority, adding a 500-seat theater. Councilmember Nan Worrell said she was conflicted about the 50 weeks of dark windows. You say, of course, 10 days better than none. So what do you hope ends up with this property?
You know, the nice thing, I made the point of asking if it is going to be set up as a theater that will always be stuck as a theater. And it is going to be set up in a way where they're going to clean up the space and they can add the theater seating, but that can also be removed. So really, it's setting up an open room that can be used for other purposes as well. And we do have Kimball someone came up and mentioned that there might be some opportunities for Kimball to collaborate if they had a big show that wanted to use some gallery space. We do have people asking for spaces for parties. I mentioned the Latino community has mentioned that they're always looking for spaces for quinceañeras and family events. So I'm hopeful that there are opportunities to use this space in a way that will benefit the community and it won't just sit as dark windows.
Yeah, so any concern on the potential impact it could have on other theater venues like the Egyptian Theater and the Eccles Center?
Well, since it's really only slated to be used as a theater space for those 10 days and then the seats can be removed, it's not likely. I guess the seats could be put back in, but I don't feel like it's being set up to be used as a theater space year-round.
All right. And then the Lilac Hill subdivision, that was continued. But as we heard from Anita Bear, basically a slip and slide, potentially a slip and crash road. Mm-hmm. Is the council taking this seriously? I mean, you had mentioned, I believe, that you live there and, mm-hmm. and know what we're talking about here.
Yes. And I think, you know, this is I believe that's the reason that we continued it is because we are taking it very, very seriously. We understand the neighborhood's concerns. We understand the developer's property rights. And we really want to make sure that we do find a solution that meets the needs of the neighborhood and allows the developer to build the project that they would like to build. And so by sending it back to the planning staff, they are going to be able to take a look and see if there's a better way to divide the property that can make a single point one driveway off of Deer Valley Loop and not have the driveway off of Rossi Hill. And yeah, you know, a lot of our roads, they're dealing with the same things that we're dealing with in all of Old Town, with narrow roads designed for, you know, horse cart and buggy back in the mining days that are steep and twisty. And we've evolved a lot and we put a lot more pressure on these roads nowadays than they were designed for.
Council member Cindy Matsumoto said that she'd like to alert people on the Deer Valley Loop to inform them about what's happening. What was her concern in particular?
Well, the concern we're hearing from Rossi Hill is that we're adding an extra driveway, which is adding extra traffic impacts. And so if we only have the access on Deer Valley Loop, she felt that it would be fair to let people know that there will be extra traffic and extra impacts on Deer Valley Loop.
Okay. And then the Shotski request, I mean, we had a great turnout year, more than 1,000 participants, and organizers now want to make this an annual event. Mm-hmm. Here's one more event, though. Council mm-hmm. says that we want to try and give residents a break from events. This is for a good cause. So mm-hmm. do you approve it?
Yeah, you know, it's a balancing act that we're working with. This one was really a big local event. I think a lot of locals attended it last year, and there was a lot of local support for it. And also, this does have pretty minimal impacts. They close the street for about half a day, and then it's open again and flowing. But yeah, and they're even reducing. I believe they're going to try to keep it with their U-turn concept, which I'm very interested in seeing how you do a shot ski with a U-turn. But they're going to try to keep it above the post office. It may wander down, but they're really doing some things to mitigate the impact on the street. They took some feedback from the Historic Main Street Business Alliance seriously in to be able to provide additional crossings. So I think that, yeah, I mean, as with everything, it's all about trying to find a balance for events, keeping our local businesses, keeping people going to the stores during our local businesses during the off season, and trying to find a breath of fresh air in between.
So does it come back to council then once they've kind of worked some of that out, or did you just go ahead and approve it and say, figure it out?
We approved the Master Festival license.
Okay.
And I think they have it figured out. We have the fee schedule figured out. So it was a package deal.
All right. And then what about the proposed business license fees? Are you concerned, like Andy Bierman had mentioned? You know, I mean, we're almost tripling them.
Yes. Yeah, so they met with a lot of stakeholders in making this decision. And we even had...
Who's they?
The
Sundance? Our
business licensing department met with a lot of stakeholders in making these decisions. Main Street Business, Sundance, other stakeholders. And what they came to was that they felt that the people that were coming in during Sundance to do these pop-up events were going to be able to handle the cost. But really, there are pretty big impacts on our local businesses. When you think about the cost of setting up an entire store, bringing in something, you know, when they do, my mind is blanking on some of the people that came in last year, but they completely take over these, our local businesses, take everything out and then repaint, bring in a whole new product line. And there is an immense amount of garbage and trash and just refuse and parts and paint that comes along with these events. And our local businesses were picking up the tab after they left. And so this is really evening out the playing field for a lot of that. In addition, the amount of the number of large semi-trucks coming onto the street and painters and people bringing stuff in and out really does clog up our streets. So by adding an enforcement fee, we're going to better be able to enforce and make sure that people are using our set load-in, load-out times. There's a lot of administrative costs as well as far as doing inspections on making sure all these new setups and designs are safe. So really, it's not that we are tripling the price. It's that we have been providing a 3x discount for the past 15 years. And so we're really trying to just make sure that the costs that come to the city are reimbursed by the people that host these little small pop-up event spaces during Sundance.
All right. The staff was saying that they're recommending a 4 a.m. Is this a start time? Is that nobody can show up and start doing this until 4 a.m.? That's still pretty darn early.
It is. And there is some concern about noise. So again, part of this is that we're going to try it for this year and we'll see how it goes. But another concern that we've heard is that when we have Sundance coming in and people are moving into the local shops on Main Street with the big semi-trucks and people painting and doing things, it really blocks the flow of traffic. And it doesn't make for a good ambiance walking up and down the street when people are loading in and loading out continuously. So by restricting the hours of load in and load out, we're hoping that we can make sure that people get in and then the stores are open for business and Main Street's a lovely place to be and there's music and fun things going on. And then after the 6 days, they can load out and it doesn't feel like there's this continuous move-in, move-out going on Main Street.
Okay. Becca, anything else you wanted to mention from yesterday's meeting?
No. I would like to remind people, though, that there is a primary going on and that the ballots are due within the next by August 15th. So make sure you check your mail and get a stamp and get those in the mailbox.
Okay. Becca Gerber, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, coming up August 8th at the Heber City Day of Giving. It happens for just 4 hours in the studio with details. I have one of the organizers, Marianne Boxall, Reagan Jostrom, and John Philpott. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
So we'll start with you, Marianne. What is a Day of Giving? Is it something happening nationally?
It is not. It is something we have started in our local community that we hope to be able to do annually. And it's an opportunity for people to come out and give back to the community in one organized event.
Okay, so why did you organize this?
Well, we have seen a lot of things where people have been in need, and we consistently see it. And so as a business operating in Heber City and Wasatch County, we wanted to give back to those community members that we work with so often.
Okay, so Reagan, how does it work?
So we will be at the Heber City Police Station from 1 to
5,
and we will have a winter coat drive, we will have a food drive for the local pantry, we will have a blood drive, and then we have John from Be the Match there.
Okay, and tell me, John, about that. This is the Bone Marrow Registry.
Yes, Be the Match is the National Marrow Donor Registry. We help patients who have blood cancers like leukemia and lymphoma and whose only hope of survival is to receive a marrow transplant to find a matched, unrelated donor when they need one. And it surprises a lot of people, but truly only 30% of patients have a matching donor in their family. The other 70% have to find a complete stranger to save their life. And that's why we need the community to come out and support this event and come and at the very least learn the facts about marrow donation, because frankly, there are a lot of myths and misconceptions out there.
Yeah. So are you just giving information or are you actually putting people on a register?
We're actually adding people to the registry. The whole process is super easy. There's no blood sample involved or anything like that to join the registry. It's simply a couple minutes of paperwork for some contact information and then a couple quick cheek swabs is really all it takes to get the little DNA profile that transplant teams need to match donors and recipients.
That's all it takes, and just a swab.
Exactly.
What's done with that information, though? A lot of people concerned about who has their DNA.
Of course. It's the world that we live in. Be the Match only maps the specific blood proteins in the DNA that are used to match donors and recipients. It's HLA typing, just the same type of tissue typing that's done for organ transplants like liver, kidney, things like that. And that information is kept all in-house. We receive a little bit of government funding. So you can imagine the government's very, very careful as to where they put their funding, and we would lose it in a heartbeat if we were to be careless with it.
Yeah. So, and any request from law enforcement would be denied.
Well, yes, exactly. We don't care what your history is.
Okay. So, how do people participate, Marianne? They just show up?
Yep. We have an opportunity for them to register for the blood drive online if they want to go to, we have an event on our Facebook page or to our website at innovativerealestate.com so they can get information about that. And then otherwise, they just show up. So to be a part of the Be the Match registry, they can just come at that time. He'll have kits available to be able to do it there, as well as just bringing the food and items that they want to donate. They can just come and participate and be a part of it.
All right. You'll get that all distributed then to where it needs to go.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Anything else you, anyone wants? Okay, great. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
KPCW Newstime, 8:48. Good morning. Well, coming up next Wednesday, August 8th at noon, it's this month's free Lunch and Learn at the PC Mark. In the studio with a preview of that, I have this month's presenter, Audrey Lee. Good morning, Audrey.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a repeat presenter. I know that.
Yes, I'm a repeat presenter. I've been here for a while, so I've had a chance to create something new. I am a PhD in exercise sports science. I have a master's in nutrition and wanted to do something a little bit different for everybody. So the title, Train Like a Pro, Fuel Like, Feel Like a Champ. But it's about fueling. It's about training for performance. We are all athletes because we all perform. We perform in our different functions and roles, like you hear performing for us listening to KPCW, or people that are performing as moms and dads or performing in their jobs. We want to have best energy. We want to feel great. How do we do that? And so taking tips from professional athletes and then applying that to our lives.
Besides coffee, huh?
Besides coffee. Yeah. So other than coffee.
Yeah. So tell us, give us some of the ideas of some of the tips that you'll giving people next week.
Yeah. Well, the first one is looking at training itself, right? A lot of people, when they do train or when they push themselves to high intensity or maximum. Like, that's not always the best thing to do. You need to do some work, but then you also balance that with rest or recovery. So I'm going to really focus on recovery. How do we recover? How do we deal with stress? Breathing exercises. Like, do we take the time to breathe, to slow down? Little things like that, like that's a practical little tip. But then also, too, how do we balance our fuel? Energy is essential to life, but are we taking in the food and drinks or beverages that are going to help us be energized? So I'm going to talk about that. It's like, when are you eating? Are you eating one meal, a huge meal at the end of the day, or are you taking in little pieces or bits of energy throughout the day so that you can stay consistent with your energy and focus and attention?
Okay, and then where does sleep and rest and recovery fit into all of
that? Yeah, sleep, rest, and recovery fits in. Those are essential parts that if you're not getting in adequate, sufficient, quality sleep, you're not allowing your body to recover from all of the things that you do during your day. And sleep is an issue. Sleep is an issue for people, but we'll talk about things that you can do to prepare yourself for sleep. You know, so if you're still on the go, buzzing before you go to sleep, it's going to be challenging to relax. So relaxation techniques to help you prepare for rest.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just starting to see a lot more about this, more than I'd ever had. And that's, you know, with our devices and the blue light that's being emitted. I mean, you often hear about, you know what, turn off your devices an hour before you go to bed. But I was never really understood what they were talking about, because many of us will read on a device like that. But it's apparently the blue light that is the harmful effects. And we have it now everywhere, in front of our television, in front of our computer screens, in front of our phones and our other devices. And can you talk to us a little bit about that at all? Do you know much?
Well, I don't know too much about the science of that in particular. But the easy part of that is that we're here in the mountains. We've got this gorgeous nature that's right here, accessible at our fingertips. And so if you can get away from those lights and get away from technology to flush your body, to flush the lungs, to let your eyes focus on real things, nature, that's going to help, you know, and that's a simple, easy way.
Okay, again, it happens Wednesday, noon to 1. People are welcome to bring their lunch.
Yes, and there will be samples, because I'm going to do some sample exercises, breathing techniques, some exercises, stretching, and a sample drink smoothie.
Wonderful. Okay. Again, that's next Wednesday at the PC Mark. Audrey, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's 8:56. Good morning. Well, as we have told you, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus returning to Park City for Arts Festival Weekend as part of the Big Stars Bright Night series put on by the Park City Institute. On the phone with me, a preview of what we can expect, I have Tim Seeley. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
So I know you have just a few minutes before you jump on a plane, but tell us about the chorus, who they are, and how many members, and why they do this.
Well, let me see if I can do that in 3 minutes. So the chorus was founded in 1978. It's the first gay chorus on the planet, and now they're all over the world. We have 300 members, which is too big to get on a plane. So we're actually bringing 70 of our singers. We're bringing the members of four ensembles. And they'll be singing individually as four ensembles and then together as a 70-voice chorus. And it is going to be uproarious fun, I will just tell you that.
Yeah. How many shows do you do a year?
Oh, good heavens. We actually do around 50 concerts a year, which for volunteers is a lot. They don't all do all of the shows, obviously. Like this weekend, there are 70 of the 300. But we stay really busy. And we're going to, please go on our website, sfgmc.org. We're going to the South. We're taking 300 to Mississippi, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee in October.
Yeah, you mentioned all volunteers, but you do receive some money. So where do any proceeds that you go, do they go to just to pay for music and travel and things like that?
Well, we have a pretty huge budget and a staff that manages all of the things that it takes. We have 8 full-time staff members to keep this thing going. So not all the proceeds go to my salary, let's just be clear. But we do benefits all year long. In fact, about 35 to 40 of our appearances are all benefits for other organizations.
Wow. And you mentioned the four ensembles. Give us an idea of what we're going to hear. I mean, do you have like a jazz ensemble, a folk ensemble?
We do. So one is a show choir. One is a college a cappella group. One is a tight vocal jazz group. And the fourth one is all gospel and R&B. So each of them has a genre that they specialize in. And then they come together as a big choir.
Okay. Sounds fascinating. Again, showtime 7 o'clock on Sunday. Doors open at 5:30. Looking forward to seeing you, Tim. Thanks for your time.
We are so excited. Thank you for your time.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.